everything you got. Play fast, play hard. Let's beat these boys tonight in their house.
It's party time. It's party time.
Dad, here we go.
Touchdown! You are listening to the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. Now here's your host, Brand Duffy.
That's right, another week and a huge division matchup to break down as the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast continues. I'm Fran Duffy, and as always, I think we've got a great show for you here on episode number 84. At the top of this week's show, we've got Chalk Talk, where I chat with NFL film senior producer Greg Cosell as we take a close look at the Eagles' loss to the Cincinnati Bengals and go over our findings from both sides of the ball after watching the tape before we look ahead to next week's matchup against those Washington Redskins. Next up, we've got Scouting Report, where I want to talk about a player that missed the game the last time these two teams played, but he's become a big part of what they do on defense down in the nation's capital. We have got a ton to get into, as always, so let's not waste any time. Greg and I talk Eagles-Bengals before we dive into all of the biggest things you need to know as this team prepares to take on the Washington Redskins. Let's get to that chat now in Chalk Talk.
Let's get down to business. It's time for Chalk Talk.
Joining me once again here on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast, NFL film senior producer and Eagles game plan analyst Greg Cosell. Greg, welcome back to the NovaCare Complex. It's been a couple days since we've had to digest this Eagles loss to the Cincinnati Bengals. It's one good way to put that.
Did you get indigestion?
I don't want to talk about it. I had to take some medicine. I made it through, though. I made it through to the other side. But let's talk about it. I want to get right into it. The number one topic that I feel like everybody wants to talk about this weekend, and rightfully so in terms of who he is Carson Wentz.
Right.
And the number one word, the buzzword we're hearing this week, is mechanics. And it might be footwork, it might be lower body mechanics. Everyone's kind of talking about the fundamental lower body mechanics of Carson Wentz and where they are at this stage. And a lot of people are worried in terms of what he can be in the future. Why is it still an issue? Why is this still cropping up when the coaches have been talking about it? How can they fix it? Can they fix it? So I want to talk to you. You've been watching quarterbacks for much longer than I have. Tell us first what you're seeing from Carson Wentz mechanically as you watch him on tape.
Well, let's understand a couple of things. First of all, very few quarterbacks come into the NFL with polished mechanics. So we have to start with the idea that every quarterback who comes in the NFL has mechanics and fundamentals that need to be worked on. Most of the time, they're worked on in the off season. It's very hard during the season to spend an awful lot of time on mechanics. Now, coaches do, but it's hard because you're very focused on game plan. Now, I would say with Carson Wentz that Wentz has a tendency at times for his lower body and his arm not to quite be right in terms of sync and coordination. That leads at times to his arm being a little late through the motion, and that's when the ball sails. Now, I know a lot of people are concerned about how he moves the ball back, the release. And is the release a little low? You could say that, but I watched him really closely this week. And there'll be some quarterback purists, I'm sure, who believe that he does drop the ball slightly below his elbow and that that's a problem. And they might think that's something that can't be fixed and is a problem. I don't think it impacts his delivery greatly in terms of speed of delivery, because I watched a number of throws this week and I was looking specifically where the ball came out pretty quick.
Whenever I watch him, you definitely do notice. I mean, if you play it in slow motion, you can see, he will drop the ball, especially in times where he's stuck in the pocket. Really, when he's in rhythm, you don't really see him drop that ball.
No, the ball never goes below his waist.
Certainly.
So it really comes down to one's view of the way he sort of turns the ball kind of away from his body, which brings the ball lower than his elbow, which would not be the ideal way people would teach it. My guess is you're probably not going to change that. I view this more as a tweak and being polished. Now, there's no question when you throw the ball as much as he's been asked to throw it this year in the cauldron of NFL games as a rookie quarterback, quite honestly, being asked, and I'm just giving you my honest opinion, being asked to do too much for any number of reasons. I mean, let's face it. The Eagles have essentially built an offense around a rookie quarterback that has limited weapons on the perimeter, no consistent week-to-week run game. They've run the ball well at times.
Sure.
So they built their offense around a rookie quarterback and asked him essentially to carry the offense week-to-week.
Behind, by the way, the third-string right tackle,
correct,
the
second-string
left guard, go on and
so,
on.
So when all said and done, does he need work? Absolutely. You'd be wrong to say otherwise. Are they fatal flaws that will prevent him from being a good quarterback? No. The other added element to this is the fact that over the last month, and you indicated to me I did not see the press conference, Jim Schwartz, and he tends to be honest in his assessments, over the last month, the Eagles' defense has been really poor. So now Carson Wentz was asked to drop back more than 60 times. Now, clearly that's an aberration. But quite honestly, he shouldn't even be asked to drop back more than 35 times in a game. You know, Dak Prescott, he's averaging 29 passes a game. Now, I know the Eagles don't have the same people around, but the point is to ask a rookie quarterback to do what Carson Wentz is doing is hard. And I'm sure mentally he feels he can do it, and you want him to feel that way. But that's just hard.
So let's break it down a little bit. So you talked about his lower body being separate and not in sync with
his
upper body. So
right.
I really want to kind of get into that and really explain it for the fans listening. So when you say that and you talk about the slightly longer upper body mechanics and you're talking about the lower body, meaning that initial step to step into a throw. And there are times, too, when you talk about that initial step where he overstrides.
He overstrides.
And that kind of throws things out of whack as well.
Well, what that does is when you overstride, your arm ends up being late. See, the way it really should happen is if you stride properly, if your lower body works properly, your upper body should just come with it.
Right.
It's almost not a conscious thing.
Well, it's the way that I explain it, because you know, when you look at football and technique, not everybody grew up playing quarterback. Not everybody grew up playing any other position in football. But pretty much everybody grew up and knew what it took to swing a baseball bat.
Right.
Or now at this stage of life, maybe swing a golf club. And you know that your lower body, if you're swinging a baseball bat, when you take that initial step towards the pitcher, your upper body, if you're going too wide or if you're going too early, you're going to be thrown off balance.
Correct.
It's the same kind of idea
correct.
When you're talking about throwing a football.
Right. So what happens, as I said, is his arm ends up being late. And when your arm is late and you overstride, you end up throwing off balance, and you're kind of leaning back and trying to adjust with your arm, but you end up throwing the ball high.
And that's where you almost see a lot of those times where he does throw high. You can almost see it's not a hitch in the release.
No.
But that's kind of what it is. It's almost like his arm catching up
to
the rest of his
body. It's like a pitcher in baseball. Pitchers who overstride, they tend to get up in the strike zone.
Right.
And it's the same concept, because your upper body has to make up and compensate for your lower body's mistake.
So when you watch all these, there's a ton of young quarterbacks in the league playing right now. You mentioned Dak Prescott. You talk about Derek Carr, Marcus Mariota, Jameis Winston. When you watch all these other guys, and we'll leave Dak Prescott out because he's obviously still a rookie, you know, all the other young quarterbacks over the last couple of years, have you seen them go through similar issues and come out the other side?
I would say Jameis Winston also had a tendency to overstride, and that needed to be worked on. He needed to get better and better, and he still at times has a tendency to do that. And he throws some interceptions and some inaccurate passes that are high. Mariota does not have that issue. He's a very compact guy. Derek Carr. Derek Carr, and obviously he's having a year that is being viewed as an MVP year and deservedly so, but he's really had to work hard on his lower body mechanics, because his last 2 years in college, he played in that spread offense, and spread offense has really hurt quarterback mechanics, because everything is quick, that it's a lot of quick short throws, and quarterback mechanics are not really focused on, because it's just not important to the offense working effectively. So he's really needed to work on that. He's now in his third year, and I would say just over the last 6-7 weeks, his lower body mechanics have gotten far more consistent, and he throws the ball with much better balance and a firmer base.
I'm coming at you with this question cold, and I don't even know if it's even kosher for me to ask you this, but off to the side, you've told me in the past, you know, early in his career, Blake Bortles has had issues with his mechanics, you know, his lower body and his upper body. And you've mentioned how there are times where it needs to be, he might need a complete reworking.
And
in
I don't
the
even know if that's possible.
And so at this point, how do you think, A, that that's possible for him? But since bringing it back to the Eagles, is it something where you see where Carson is right now? Is that any way comparable to Blake early in his career?
I don't think so. And the other thing, too, is the one thing I will say is there were stretches where Bortles clearly was better, and this year he's clearly regressed. Now it gets into coaching. I don't know how Blake Bortles was coached. I wouldn't even begin to comment on it.
Right.
I know Flip, the Eagles quarterback coach, and I think he does a phenomenal job. Again, but I'm not there every day, so I don't know what's worked on. As I said, the off season really is when this stuff needs to be worked on hard. It's hard. You can make slight adjustments. I mean, there was a game, I forget, it was back 3 or 4 weeks, and I forget which game it was. He got out of whack a little bit in one game, and then you could tell the next week that he clearly worked on his mechanics, and he was much more compact and tighter. Now, again, he shouldn't be throwing the ball as much as he's being asked to. That's a coaching philosophy, and also a
factor of how the games.
Of course, of course.
They played. Right. I think it was 34 passes attempted in the fourth quarter on Sunday against Cincinnati.
Right, kind of one of those things. And obviously, look, when you have an offense that is very up and down, and almost has to be by the very nature of the fact that weapons are somewhat limited. What happens if your defense is not keeping the game together is there tends to be an impatience both with the head coach and the play calling and just the players, because you realize that, hey, every possession now seems magnified because you just – every game starts to get that feel that, hey, are we going to get a lot of chances? I mean, they only had 6 meaningful possessions against Green Bay, and this week, as we discussed during the game when we were watching it, is – the Bengals had a lot of third and long conversions through the first 2-3 possessions, and that just creates a dynamic in a game where offensively you think, you know, every play gets magnified.
They had a long third down conversion on 5 of their first 6 scoring drives, the Cincinnati Bengals on Sunday, which was that's obviously very tough to overcome. Before we get to that side of the ball, though, one question. We actually got a question from one of our listeners on Twitter, and I wanted to give him a shout-out. At Hosen Zarfangle, in wins – Carson Wentz has been sacked a total of 6 times. In losses, 20. What can Doug Peterson and the staff do to help? Loves the podcast. And obviously there are things that play into it, just like
yeah, I mean, again,
overall.
You know, that's a question without knowing.
Of course.
My guess is in the losses he's thrown the ball a lot more.
Exactly. So there's more chances for him to be sacked.
And the defense is playing more in a pass situation where, so again, I know that might sound like a cliched answer because I don't remember the specifics of all these plays, but obviously when you're behind and you have to throw, it's totally, the defense always has the advantage on third and long in the NFL. And we'll get to the Eagles' defense, but on third and long, the defense always has the tactical advantage.
All right, well, let's get to that then. So you talk about third and long, the defense having the tactical advantage. I wrote my piece earlier this week on PhiladelphiaEagles.com. On all those drives, and I just mentioned 5 of the first 6 scoring drives for the Cincinnati Bengals, they were able to capitalize on a third and long play early in the series, early in the drive, to move the ball and keep the drive alive. Where the Eagles did so well on first and second down.
Right.
You know, they made a great run stop, or they sniff out a screen, or they get a pass breakup, and now it's 3rd and 7, it's 3rd and 11, 3rd and 9, and they give up a play. What did you
see
when you watched
today? Let's just – normally I'm not a big stat guy, Fran, but the numbers really tell a story here. Let's start with 3rd and long, which we're going to call 6 or more.
Okay. Okay. Wow, that's a generous – so 6 and more. Yeah, okay.
6 or more.
Yeah.
Okay, let's do that.
Yep.
There have been 30 meaningful snaps on 3rd and 6 or more in the last 4 games.
Wow. Okay.
30, okay? They've allowed 11.7 yards per play on those 30 snaps of 3rd and 6 plus. Offenses have converted 37% on 3rd and 6 plus, which, just so people understand, is a ridiculously high number.
And not just 3rd down, 3rd and 6 plus. Yes.
Here's what opposing quarterbacks are on those 30 snaps. 20 for 28, which is 72% for 347 yards. You know, that's – and Jim Schwartz, you said – so this is not, wow, I'm saying something out of school here. Jim Schwartz knows this, and this is bad. Now, overall 3rd down, offenses are 52% in the last four games conversion rate.
Which is also very,
and
very bad.
They've only had one sack on third down. So keep that in mind.
Over the last four games, Eagles giving up 52% conversion on third down. Right over the in the league overall right now, just to give you a sense, the Redskins are 32nd defensively on third down at 48% over the last four games, the Eagles at 52%. So a very low number in terms of
and
ranking.
And in this matchup, the Redskins over the last four games are tremendous on third down. They're about 54% on third down in the last four games.
Wow, yeah.
So there's a matchup to really look for in this game.
Yeah, absolutely. So when you look at this defense in general, I thought a lot of the same themes that we had talked about previously with Fletcher Cox. They definitely slid protection his way a number of different times. But it was interesting because it was such a tough game to watch because – on first and second down, I mean, they did do their job. Against the run, 2.4 yards per carry for the Bengals. I thought you saw a lot of good examples of good overall team run defense. The linebackers are attacking downhill, guys setting the edge. I thought Connor Barwin did a good job in the run game this week. Brandon Graham made a number of really great plays from the backside in this game. It was just really tough to watch the secondary, and Jim Schwartz said today, in a slump right now, in terms of giving up those plays downfield. And like you mentioned, nearly 12 yards per play on third and long is truly – it's an amazing number.
And they've played different coverages. I mean, it's not just one or two coverages. They've mixed and matched, and they've been burned. I mean, it's just – look, we saw this past week, and even go back to the Green Bay game, they're burned when they play man. They're burned when they play their different zone concepts. They've just had a difficult time, and if you can't get off the field on third and long, that just impacts everything about your team.
Right.
And this team does not have a great margin for error, certainly not on offense.
Yeah.
And as we said, when teams convert third and long, the dynamic of the game changes. There's an impatience that settles into your offense and your play calling, and it's just it becomes difficult to play.
So let's talk about this matchup now with the defense reeling over the last couple weeks, going up against a Washington offense. We talked about it the last time the Eagles faced this team back in week six. It's for lack of a better word, it's a fun offense to watch. Schematically, they do so much.
Yeah.
In terms of what you like to call receiver distribution and location, the run game is very multiple. They like to do lots of different things on the ground.
But they got away from the run game a little bit this week.
They have overall. Yeah. It's kind of interesting. But remember, they came into that game, I want to say week six, they came in 30th in the NFL against the run. We saw what they did rushing for over 200 in that game in week six.
So I remember that.
Absolutely something that the Eagles must be worried about and expecting this team to try and run the football, although Spencer Long may be out in this game with a concussion.
Right, but John Sullivan replaced him, and I thought he actually did a good job.
He's a veteran.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's not. I wouldn't call that a weakness.
Yeah, sure.
Matt Jones was a major factor week six. He's now been a healthy scratch for weeks because it's Rob Kelly, and Thompson is really, he plays a lot in 11 personnel packages and not just when it's third down, and he's a really effective player in those packages, both as a runner and as a receiver.
Give us a scouting report on Rob Kelly, because fans, I think, got introduced to him. He was
a
drafted free agent. What have you seen from Rob Kelly over the last 8 weeks?
I think he's a strong inside runner. I think he's got quick feet in the hole. I think he's a sustaining type back. He's had a couple long runs, but ultimately he's a sustaining type back. I think he's the kind of back that if it's blocked for three or four, he can get six or seven. There's a toughness to his running style. He's got some natural power. He's not going to necessarily run over people, but I think he can work for extra yards. So I think he's a good back who fits an offense that's mostly built around a very multiple pass game.
Yeah, and when you talk about that pass game, it starts with Kirk Cousins. What are your overall feelings on Cousins? Because I remember when we first talked about him back in week six, he was coming off that rough stretch. That first few games of the season, he did not look very good. What have you seen in the last eight as the offense and his numbers have kind of skyrocketed?
Well, if you look at quarterback play, we had a great discussion in the office talking, there's labels for quarterbacks, okay? People like to say, well, he's a manager, or he's managed, or he's controlled, or he's this, I think there's a sense that Kirk Cousins is a manager. Now, I'll say this. When you execute well a highly schemed, effective offense with many weapons, multiple use of formations and personnel, that's what you're being asked to do as a quarterback. He's been doing that with consistency. So we can debate you know, other things. I mean, does he have a gun? No, he doesn't have a gun. Is his arm strong enough to make most throws? Absolutely. But he's executing at a pretty good level a well-schemed, well-designed, multiple pass game offense. So Kirk Cousins is playing very well. So you can people can label him whatever they want.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. That'll be a huge topic of conversation, I'm sure, once we get to the offseason. His contract coming off the franchise tag will be a huge topic of discussion.
They're in any team that has a professional quarterback is in a what are they going to do, let him walk? Then yeah. Who's going to play quarterback?
Right, exactly right. It's going to be very interesting. But you get to this pass game. From the way that they use the tight ends to where they move guys like DeSean Jackson and Jamison Crowder, who has turned into such a reliable weapon for that team. Pierre Garçon is still making plays. I mean, they've got...
looking pretty good, by the way. He still moves pretty well.
He does. He's going to be a free agent this year, yeah. as is DeSean. So it'll be interesting to see. They've got Josh Doctson, who they took in the first round. We'll see. I'm sure he will probably take one of their spots this offseason. But let's talk about first this receiving core. Of the three guys... who scares you the most? And of the three guys, who are you most surprised by, I guess, at this point in their career? I mean, did you expect Jamison Crowder in year two to be this kind of player in this kind of offense?
Off of last year?
Yeah.
Yes. Prior to last year, even though I liked him, not necessarily.
Yeah.
I think, look, DeSean is always a guy who can lift the top off the coverage, and given the way the Eagles have played on the outside, you must be concerned about that because the last thing you want is DeSean, you know, catching long touchdowns. I mean, I remember the last game, what got their offense going was a 1st-and-10 play where he ran the deep over out against Mills, and he caught about a 35-yard pass. I'm sure you remember the play very well.
Sure, yep.
You know, and he just ran away from Jalen Mills, who was in man coverage. So you don't want to give up those plays. But I think overall, within the context of their offense and the scheming and what Kirk Cousins does really well, which is kind of make firm touch throws and work in the middle of the field, I think Jamison Crowder is someone you really must make sure does not make big plays. And big plays for Crowder, that could be 16 yards on 3rd and 8. You know, I'm not talking about a 60-yard touchdown, although he's shown some ability to get vertical.
Yeah, I mean, this is an offense that when Kirk Cousins is throwing the ball downfield 20-plus yards, he's got a quarterback rating of over 126. He's 24-49.
That's pretty good.
Eight touchdowns. That's pretty good
that's pretty
on
good.
The deep passing game.
Yeah.
But it's not just, oh, yeah, it's a chuck-a-deep offense.
No.
It's an offense that's very efficient. They find ways to move the sticks. They're number one in the NFL in terms of three and outs. They've only had 12 three and out drives all season long.
That is really impressive.
10 play drives. They're third in the NFL with 26 over 12 or 13 games. It's a really, really impressive offense when you look at the way that they use everything. And we haven't talked about the tight ends yet. People asked last time we played this team, Jordan Reed was out, and everyone said, oh, how's it going to change the offense? Doesn't change the offense because Vernon
really
Davis
doesn't.
Comes in and he plays. Now, Jordan Reed is at a different point in his career than Vernon Davis, but they use both players.
Yeah, the
very,
only difference is, of
ways.
Course, is that when they're both healthy, they have the two tight end
right.
element, which
exactly.
is really difficult to deal with because it's the tight ends that really change defensive deployment more than wide receivers. But still, Vernon Davis, his skill set is different than Jordan Reed, and we won't know about Jordan Reed till probably Thursday, Friday, or Saturday. Vernon Davis has much more vertical ability.
Yeah, it's really interesting to see how they use both those players. And like you said, when you factor in the multiple tight end sets, they're willing to go to run, they're willing to throw, they might spread you out, they might go play action,
yep.
vertical. They present a lot of different things.
They have a play action boot game as well where yep. Cousins gets outside of the pocket.
Yep. And you talk about the offensive line earlier you mentioned.
They get Williams back this week.
They get Williams back this week. Ty Insecki has played pretty well.
Yeah,
they're talking about moving Trent Williams to guard by some
people. Yeah, well, this was probably of the four games he started. This past week was his worst game, but
right.
overall – as a backup left tackle in the NFL, they basically asked him to do the same thing that Williams did, block 101, and he did it.
Yeah, this is going to be a big game. To me, this is the matchup of the game. And we said it
right.
going into last week, or the last time these two teams played, the Eagles' defensive front against this Redskins' offensive line. To me, the two matchups that I think are key are, and they're the matchups that I think, one, should go in the Eagles' favor, and you want it to really go in the Eagles' favor, is Benny Logan against Sean Laval, the left guard. There were times in that game, and this was the game when Benny Logan got hurt and actually left the game.
Well, Laval, I mean, I think Benny Logan's a really good player. He's not quite Calais Campbell, who just ate up.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, that one
ate him up.
I know exactly.
But there were a bunch of plays.
Of course. Yeah, it's no question about it. But and then you look at Brandon Scherff, it was probably the best offensive lineman, interior offensive lineman in the NFL, arguably, along with a guy like Zach Martin and Travis Frederick and some of the other players that play guard in the NFL. Going up against Fletcher Cox, I mean, you're talking about strength on strength there. I thought that there were plays where Cox got the better of Scherff, but Scherff really showed to me more than any other player I've seen in Fletcher Cox's career the ability to block Fletcher one-on-one. And that's something that you don't see from anybody around the NFL. Scherff is a great player as well.
No, and I think, look, what unfortunately has continued to stand out over these last four games where we've talked about the Eagles D struggling so badly, particularly on third down, is their inability to generate any kind of consistent pass rush from their nickel defensive line.
Yeah.
No matter what combination is in there, who lines up where, they've been unable to do that. And if they can't do that, you know, look, Jim Schwartz obviously talked about it this week. I'll be very anxious to see if there's any changes. I don't mean personnel changes. I just mean schematic changes. Hey, more blitz, more, you know, things that are more challenging. You know, I don't know, but I think you do reach a point looking at these last four games, and it sounds like he may have reached that point where something I think needs to be a little. It can't just be, hey guys, we have to execute better.
Yeah,
which obviously they do, but sometimes the coach can help that with more aggressive calls, more challenging concepts.
Yeah, Washington only allowing 16 sacks so far throughout the season, second fewest.
That's the strength of Cousins. He has a good sense of timing.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how the Eagles try to combat that timing. And then you look over the defensive side quickly. Obviously not as strong as the Redskins' offense, but certainly present a number of different challenges. The last time these two teams played, it was Big V's first start, so Ryan Kerrigan had himself a game in that.
Right.
That's not going to be the issue this week.
No.
You do have Alan Barber, who did struggle with Carlos Dunlap in this game against Cincinnati this past week. But Ryan Kerrigan, Preston Smith, Trent Murphy, off the edge as kind of those relentless pass rushers that can win with speed or win with power and leverage. And then you get into the secondary and the back seven. Josh Norman, this week, it was interesting. Obviously, look, he shadowed Fitzgerald.
They matched him up mostly to Fitzgerald.
It was interesting, though, seeing some of the things they did with him from the slot.
Yeah, because what they did is they pretty much made Kendall Fuller the boundary corner.
Yeah.
And it'll be, look, the Eagles don't have the Larry Fitzgerald on their roster, so I don't know if he'll, because he's not matched up in every game this year.
Right.
There have just been games where he's played corner, I believe left corner. And Breland played right corner. And, you know, there were times in this game Breland matched up to the tight end, Gresham. So you wonder if he might match up to Zach Ertz at times. You don't know.
Yeah, it'll be interesting because they've done that with Dante Whitner.
Yep.
They've done it with Sue Cravens.
Yep.
A number of the players they've used against the tight end. Let's quickly just talk about Cravens. What are your general thoughts on him? He missed the Eagles last game.
Yeah.
What have been your thoughts on him in his rookie season, the second
half? Well, I think he's an important player in their sub-packages. It's predominantly nickel, some snaps of dime here and there, but I think he's important because of the athleticism. Because if he's going to play in the nickel, he's going to play with Will Compton, who's actually a very good player, but he's not a highly athletic player. Not unathletic, but, you know, Sua Cravens is really kind of a safety in a little bit of a linebacker's body. So he's got the athleticism to really help you in the pass game in nickel. Now, the key is he can struggle in the run game. If you can get offensive linemen up on Cravens in the run game when you're in 11 personnel, meaning three wide receivers, then I think you can have some success running the ball. And the run game, Fran, look, so much is on the Eagles' defense. Obviously, they can't fall behind, 14-0 after two or three possessions. But they need to stay with the run game this week, even if the game is boring. I mean, they need to try to stay with the run game.
Yeah, it's going to be a big matchup. Sunday afternoon, Lincoln Financial Field. You'll be here at the NovaCare Complex watching this game, here with myself in the studio. But very much looking forward to the matchup. Greg, appreciate the time, as always, here on PhiladelphiaEagles.com on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast.
Thanks, Grant.
Great stuff from Greg. Again, you can follow him on Twitter just like I do, at Greg Cosell. And while you're at it, I'm at FDuffy3. That's where I post all of the podcasts I'm a part of and all of our X's and O's content that we produce here at PhiladelphiaEagles.com. And I greatly, greatly appreciate everybody that promotes this podcast on social media. That's one way to support the show. But the other is to go on iTunes or go on Stitcher, wherever you listen, and give us a rating and leave us a comment. That is the number one way to support the show. And I wanted to give a shout out to Dave King, who left a comment actually on our Libsyn page, saying how much he loves the podcast and professed his love all the way up in Calgary, Canada. So thanks to Dave and all of you out there for your continued support of this show and all the rest of our podcast offerings on PhiladelphiaEagles.com. All right, let's keep this show going. I told you earlier, I wanted to profile a player that wasn't on the field the last time these two teams played in Week 6, but he will certainly be a factor on Sunday. Time to reveal who that is in our scouting report.
Dim those lights. We're headed to the film room for the scouting report.
All right, so the player that I wanted to focus on, we talked about a little bit with Greg, is rookie linebacker, safety, whatever you want to call him, Sua Cravens from USC. Just under 6'1", 226 pounds he was coming out of the draft this spring. Started all 40 games of his career for USC. 3-year career with the Trojans. Came from a really athletic family. You know, he's cousins with Dolphins tight end Jordan Cameron, Chargers linebacker Monty Teo, and his sister was a starting basketball player for the Trojans women's basketball team as well. He was a third-team All-American as a junior in 2015, so you're talking about a 3-year starter. He was a captain last year as a junior. It was his second season starting as the strong side outside linebacker in that 3-4 scheme. He was a safety when he first arrived on campus. And when I watched him last year, you know, he was lined up in the slot. At times, he was out wide over tight ends and receivers. He lined up over the tight end, pressed. He played stacked, you know, between in the tackle box, lined up as a pass rusher off the edge. He lined up deep as a safety. So you're talking about a player that was used all over the field in USC's defense. And so he had that position versatility. Some people saw him as a true safety, some as more of a box player. And some viewed him, like myself, as a linebacker moving into the NFL. And that's really what he's become in this Washington team. When I watched him on tape, he showed really good movement skills, especially for a linebacker, the ability to play in space, very accustomed to playing on an island, and he runs pretty well in the open field for a linebacker. You know, he's got the ability to run around blocks and make plays, but he also had the toughness, the ability to jack up a tight end at the point of attack and disrupt plays as an edge setter in the run game in college. You know, he attacked blocks with good hand placement. He's able to change the line of scrimmage, showed a good feel as well in the passing game for route concepts, you know, as a zone defender and underneath coverage, can read routes and jump passes early, can play as a seam, curl, flat player in zone coverage, and he had the speed to run with tight ends down the field in man. So you're talking about a guy who had a good feel for playing in space. I liked his eyes in zone coverage, and he had the ball skills and the hands to reel in interceptions. You know, he had a decent motor. I thought that improved from his sophomore year to his junior campaign, and he played with a lot more urgency last season when I watched him on tape. Now, for the negatives, you know, he almost lined up, or almost never lined up stacked. You know, I mentioned that, you know, there were times where you saw that, but it was a little bit few and far between. So you'd have to learn how to read keys on inside run and sift through traffic inside. That's part of the transition from playing as a safety or as a slot player in college and then transitioning to a full-time linebacker. We've talked about that in the past with a guy like Miles Jack, you know, a guy who played out in the slot, Darren Lee, same deal. For coming out of this draft and went to the New York Jets. When you play out in space as a college player and you're transitioning to the linebacker spot, there's a lot more to that than just saying, okay, you're going to line up close to the line of scrimmage. You're seeing things from a completely different angle, and it can change the way that you kind of read your keys and see what's going on in front of you, and it can be a challenge at times. So he certainly has to work through that. He has the lean build of a safety, needs to get a little bit bigger and stronger, still very much the case watching him with Washington. He's not a guy that's going to stack and shed an offensive lineman once he's engaged. And as a tackler, he didn't always wrap up. He wasn't a guy that was going to make a ton of plays play side as a run defender. Most of his production in college came in pursuit from the backside or in space as a secondary player. When he did make plays play side, it was because he shot a gap or he came in unblocked. You know, like I said, wasn't a guy that was going to win with his hands at the point of attack, defeat a block, and flow to the football. I thought that at times he got a little too grabby, a little bit undisciplined in man coverage, had a lot of penalties thrown on him, especially earlier in his career. And then he didn't always seem to play with that motor, you know, that urgency that I'd like to see from a safety playing closer to the line of scrimmage. And at times you have seen that this year. I know a lot of plays that Ben Fennell and I have watched during the course of our film study throughout the season of the Washington Redskins where you see that toughness. So it's nice to see him improve in that area from college to the NFL. But really, he's an intriguing player. His athletic skill set, his abilities in coverage, I'm not sure, and this is what I wrote back in the spring, not sure he's ready to play right away full-time on defense. He could grow into a starter in time, but right now I think he's a sub-package linebacker and a special teamer to try and develop. They took him in the second round, so they were very excited about what his upside would be, And he really has been more of a passing down player. There are times where they play him on first and second down, down in the box, but really you're going to see him on third down and passing downs where they think you're going to throw the ball and he can be an impact player. Had a great interception to kind of seal the game early in the season against the New York Giants. He can be a factor against backs and tight ends in space. So Sua Craven, certainly a guy that Carson Wentz and this Eagles offense will have to be aware of when they face off on Sunday at Lincoln Financial Field. So great stuff from Greg Cosell and all of you out there listening. Again, whether you're on iTunes, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Spotify, wherever you listen, because there's so many ways you can ingest this podcast, especially on PhiladelphiaEagles.com and the Eagles mobile app. Thank you. And again, if you get the time, number one way to support the show, leave us a comment, rate the show, let us know what you think. Don't be afraid to leave us a question. You heard the question I asked Greg earlier on the show. That came from one of you listeners out there. So I'd love the ability to get more in depth on topics at your request. So shoot us a comment wherever you listen to the show. All right. That being said, that'll do it. Another show in the books here on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. For everybody here at the NovaCare Complex, I'm Fran Duffy. We will talk to you next week.